What does it mean to be Korean? Is your Korean identity contingent on your birth in the Korean Peninsula, your parents' ethnicity, your ability to speak Korean? 100 years ago, this was an easier question to answer. The average person self-identifying as Korean was likely born in Korea to two ethnic Korean parents and spoke Korean. But the complexity of Korean identity in the 21st century parallels the turbulence of Korea's history in the 20th century. Displacement caused by Japanese colonialism, Stalin's deportation of ethnic Koreans from the Russian Far East to Central Asia, ethnic Koreans left in limbo after the Second World War in Japan, and the migration of Koreans to the Americas in search of new opportunities. All this history produced a diverse set of Korean communities across the world, and also a new multicultural Korean community on the Korean Peninsula. Our guest today spent the last 3 years developing a documentary about one particular group, the Korean Cubans. We're really excited to have him in the studio to tell us more about his project. With no further delay, from the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Yong Kwon, and this is Korean Context. We have with us today Joseph Jun, the director of the new documentary Geronimo, The Untold Tale of Koreans in Cuba. This movie is due to premiere in South Korea on November 21st, 2019. And if you're attending the San Diego Asian American Film Festival or the Toronto Real Asian Film Fest, please keep your eye open for this wonderful new documentary. Joseph, thank you so much for being with us here today on Korean Context.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
First and foremost, congratulations on this documentary. I had the privilege of seeing a sneak preview of it, and I was just blown away. I mean, usually when we talk about the Korean diaspora, people first think about the Korean Americans, they think about the Zainichi Koreans, but the fact that there was a Korean Cuban community with their own history and heritage was really eye-opening, and it really made me reflect on my own identity as a Korean diaspora. You have quite a story about how you came across this story. In the documentary, we find out that you didn't actually go to Cuba with the intention of making this story. You kind of stumbled on it. Could you tell us a little bit about how you ran into this Korean-Cuban community in Cuba?
Sure. I was a practicing attorney in New York. I think around my third year as a lawyer, I decided to go to Cuba because this was a year after President Obama announced a move to normalize relations with Cuba. So for the first time in like 60 years, the door was finally open for American tourists to come in. I wanted to be among the first Americans to be there and to just really soak in everything I can about Cuba. So in the beginning, my intentions were rather more secular, I would say. It was less of a spiritual journey. But it turned out that way because the first Cuban I met at the airport turns out to be a third-generation Korean Cuban. I kept asking questions to her, and I think, you know, she was somewhat annoyed, but also pleasantly so. And she ended up inviting me over to her house the next day, and I got to meet with all her family members, extended family members. We traveled to the beach together, spent a whole day with this, you know, stranger, random Korean-Cuban family, and that was really a life changer. I became more curious about how they came, and I discovered that they were sold as, I'm careful to use this word, but slaves. Other academic scholars would rather use the term indentured servants, but you know, they were living like slaves 100 years ago in Mexico, and some of them migrated to Cuba. So that's how everything started.
And of course, the story revolves around Geronimo Lim, who was actually born in Cuba. Could you perhaps provide a very brief synopsis of Geronimo Lim's career, first as a second-generation Korean-Cuban, and also his career in the Cuban Revolution and the aftermath?
Absolutely. I think you already mentioned a few keywords there, but let me actually take it even further back. In 1905, there were 20-plus ships that went from Incheon to Hawaii. Over 7,000 Koreans were sent to Hawaii to work in the sugarcane plantations. One ship, however, was headed for Mexico. The way in which people advertised about Mexico was that, hey, Mexico is this country equal to the United States in civilization and in wealth. We're desperately looking for laborers who can work in what's called the henequen farms. It's like a cactus farm. So 1,000 Koreans, not knowing that Mexico is vastly different from the United States, sign up to go to Mexico. And one of the 1,000 people who came was Jeronimo's father, who was only 2 years at the time when he left Korea, by a single mother. Im Chun-taek is Jeronimo's father's name. He moved to Cuba when he was 18. This is 1921. And 5 years later, he gives birth to Jeronimo. Jeronimo was born in Cuba in 1926, and he was the first Korean to get admitted to a university. And once he got into university, one of his classmates happens to be Fidel Castro. And just like many, you know, young intellects at the time, he also joins the social revolution and becomes one of the key members of the Castro government. And later he serves as a vice minister and he retires. And when he retired, this is around the time when the Soviet Union disintegrates and Cuba goes through what's called the special period. This is also a time when North Korea goes through the Arduous March. And so Jeronimo has this renewed sense of awakening, I would say, about what he has done for Cuba and the aftermath of communism. And I don't know if I'm giving up too much, but South Korea extends an invitation because it was a 50-year anniversary of Korea's independence. And after his visit to Korea, he goes through a series of transformation and realizes that, hey, this is a country where my father came from. And I'm a proud descendant of this country that I had not known previously. And so he goes back and he dedicates the rest of his life reconstructing and rebuilding the Korean community in Cuba in the sense of Korean identity.
You're, of course, piecing this together as you're traveling through Cuba and as you're revisiting Cuba. You didn't have someone sit you down and say, hey, this is what happened in 1905, this is what happened in 1926. You're just piecing this together in piecemeal and, you know, this giant tapestry that's being formed very slowly. Mm. When did you realize that you had a story that needed to be told?
It was my second day in Cuba, honestly. This is end of 2015. Second day, I was invited back to the house, and Jeronimo's wife, the late Jeronimo's wife, sat me down, and she brought a number of albums, photo albums, and she just dropped it in front of my face. And one by one, she starts going all over the photos, and really passionately and really desperately, as if I'm the only outlet to her story. She really passionately starts telling me about what Jeronimo did, both for Cuba and Korea. And it was there then that I realized, wow, how wasteful would it be if this ends as my cool personal experience? I happen to have studied film back in undergrad. So at first I thought, okay, I'm going to come back and try to make a YouTube video. Maybe 20-minute, 30-minute, just detailing how Koreans came, you know, who this character was. But when I did fundraising, over 3 times of what I was hoping to raise was raised. And I started to realize that, wow, you know, people around me actually really want to know about this story. And in order for me to pay proper tribute to the legacy of Jeronimo as well as other Korean Cubans, this has to be more than just a 20-minute YouTube video. So this is around the time when I quit my job. And I did another round of fundraising, start applying for a lot of grants so I can have more money, so I can hire talents to make this film. Until this point, in all honesty, I didn't know how significant of this character was, Jeronimo. I was just initially mesmerized by the fact that he fought with Che Guevara. He was a revolutionary. Like, there's a Korean who fought in the Cuban Revolution that's, like, unthinkable, right? But later I realized that he was much more than that. In fact, what makes Jeronimo as great as he is now is what he did after his stellar career in the Cuban government. It's when he turns to his roots and realizes that our sense of identity and our sense of yearning for our homeland is actually quite important in forming who we are as a character, right? And this is something I had not known previously.
When I first heard about Jeronimo, and first of all, I mean, the name is great. I mean, like, of course, I read it in English. I was like, Jeronimo Lim. And I'm like, this is an amazing name.
For sure.
And the fact that he was a Cuban revolutionary was even more appealing. I mean, exactly what you said. You fought with Che Guevara, with Fidel Castro. I just imagined him in a beret with a subatomic machine gun on top of a tank. And that's the story that I went in expecting, this kind of swashbuckling Korean-Cuban in the Caribbean. But as you mentioned, the story really is in two parts. Mm-hmm. The arc of a outsider learning to become Cuban And then the second part is a man who's starting to accept his dual identity as both Korean and Cuban. Mm. And they're both distinctly really amazing stories that's very worthwhile. I'm so glad that you dedicated the last 3 years to making this amazing movie.
Thank you.
A couple questions about both aspects of Romulo's life.
Sure.
Do you feel that the conditions that you described earlier about Koreans arriving in Mexico as essentially indentured servants / slaves, going through the hardships in these cactus farms, do you feel that that contributed to Geronimo Lim becoming a leftist, becoming more of a follower of Fidel Castro and Che Guevara?
I think so. But, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves here. I say that because when Fidel first took up on the cause of fighting for the people, I found many footages of him interviewing with the Western media. And he very clearly articulates that he's not a leftist. He's not a socialist. This is not a communist revolution. He's fighting for the democratic ideals. And he's only fighting so that he can topple the corrupt dictator, right, that they had at the time. I don't think by all means Geronimo had any left-leaning ideals in the beginning. In fact, I happen to believe that the reason Geronimo was so engaged with the social movement at the time was because this was the only way for him to become equal with other Cubans, right? His parents, as I alluded to earlier, was indentured servant, and they were still like third-class citizens working the Hennigan farms in Cuba. And he grew up as the son of such looked-down immigrant labor, right? And for him to achieve prosperity and equality with the rest of Cuban people was this revolution that promised equality, basically. Little did he know, you know, Fidel Castro takes a different turn and sides with Soviet Union and becomes communist. And I think at that point, it was too late for any sympathizers of Fidel Castro to turn back and leave. And those who did came to Miami. But Geronimo wasn't one of those. I think he still believed in the notion of equal ideals.
Now, as you mentioned, he does go through this transformation towards the second half of his life when he begins to dedicate himself to the remembrance of the Korean-Cuban legacy. And you did mention that he visits Korea in the 90s. But what do you feel catalyzed this transformation where he begins to accept both his Korean and Cuban heritage?
I think there's multiple factors that come into play. There's a spiritual reason, there's a personal reason, there's a political reason, there's social reasons. There's also physical reasons. And by that, I mean the system which he upheld for the past 50 years of his career started to dismantle. And rather than bringing equality and prosperity to the people, he realized that it actually served them less than before. The social collapse of the whole socialist system around the world was definitely a contributing factor to his transformation. On a more personal level, I think his father is just as a heroic figure as Geronimo. His father was a pendants fighter. He collected funds, and his name even appears in Kim Gu, the most prominent independence fighter of Korea. His biography, Baekbam Ilje, Im Chun-taek's name appears there. After interviewing many people who've known Geronimo in his adulthood, say that Geronimo, one of the things that he regretted the most after he visited the now-divided land, Korea, is that he claimed that he didn't listen to his father as much as he wanted to, and he didn't learn Korean as much as his father told him to. So I think that the lesson that he received from in the family from his father was very strong from a young age. I think when he visited Korea, I think all the memories of his father and the importance of preserving identity and culture and that heritage came back to him. So I think, you know, that was a catalyst for the beginning of his transformation. Obviously, the fact that South Korea is now a much richer country, testament to democratic and capitalistic value of the country, also played a role, I think, in him aligning himself closer to South Korea versus North Korea, for instance. There's also Korean-American missionaries come to Cuba, and they really selflessly dedicate decades of their life helping financially, emotionally, the Korean-Cubans. And I think he was also, yeah, moved by that effort by these Korean-American missionaries. And so, yeah, there are many contributing factors. Right. Yeah.
One of the things that I really enjoyed in your documentary was you accompany Geronimo's son as he retraces his father's visit to South Korea, and he interacts with a lot of Koreans in Korea who have corresponded with his grandfather, Im In-taek, or with Geronimo during the 90s. What was their reaction to the existence of a Korean-Cuban community? Was there aversion to it at all because of their communist past? Like, what was it like, the interaction between Koreans in South Korea and Cubans, Koreans?
There's lack of knowledge by both parties of each other, right? Hardly ever did I come across Koreans who were reluctant to engage in a conversation because of the political system or the political past. I think, generally speaking, when Koreans in Korea hear about the story of Korean Cubans, the initial response is just shock, a little bit of curiosity, and a lot of sympathy, I would say. On the other hand, I cannot generalize all the experiences of Korean Cubans, but in the case of Nelson, who's the grandson of Geronimo, when he visited Korea, his experience was very positive. But let me tell you this. He has a cousin who's also a great-granddaughter of Im Chun-taek, and who's a grandniece of Geronimo. She visits Korea, and she has a very negative experience because now there are up to 6 generations of Koreans in Cuba. But after 4th generation, everyone's mixed blood. So her authenticity was questioned in Korea. A lot of people came to her and said, maybe, you know, not without bad intention, but saying, hey, you're not fully Korean. You know, you're not one of us. And after having gone through a very similar experiences herself, she was very emotionally wounded. It is, after all, a place where her great-grandfather came, but by virtue of her mixed heritage and her inability to speak fluent Korean, her authentic Korean identity was questioned once she got to Korea. There are examples like this where people of the diaspora come to their homeland and they don't feel exactly they're part of the country, right?
Right. Geronimo, as you mentioned, in his last part of his life, dedicates himself to kind of keeping track of the Korean-Cuban community, of which there's about 900, which is what Geronimo finds in his effort to reestablish the Korean-Cuban Association. He, with the help of missionaries from the United States, establishes Korean language classes, Korean cultural classes. A lot of it is Korean Cubans looking to learn more about Korea and trying to understand what it means to be Korean. But as you mentioned, there are obviously tensions as well when Cubans of Korean descent, when they visit Korea. With this movie's premiere in South Korea, are there things that you feel Koreans could learn about their own identity by watching the Korean-Cuban experience?
Whenever I'm asked, you know, a question like this, I often turn to the Jewish example. Without the help of diaspora, there currently wouldn't be Israel, the state of Israel. And although there are tensions between, you know, the Jewish people in Israel and the Jewish diasporas, they acknowledge each other and they have learned to coexist. And they also acknowledge that without the help of the other, we wouldn't exist, right? A similar sentiment is lacking in the Korean diaspora. I think Koreans in Korea generally regard the people of diaspora as the traitors or less authentically Korean and not belonging to them. And I wanted to challenge this notion because I think, as you mentioned earlier, I think the Chinese or the Korean ethnic Chinese, 조선족, or the Korean Russians, 고려인, when they visit Korea, there's a sense of discrimination, very heavy discrimination against them. And North Korean defectors, they feel they're not perfectly inclusive of the society when they settle in South Korea. I think Korean Americans, we get the benefit of the doubt, but still I think we're often looked at with envy and maybe thinking that we're more opportunistic. We left because to seek for better opportunities for ourselves and ourselves only. So whichever diaspora you pick, there's a sense of a negative perception. And I wanted to challenge this notion and say, hey, we have ownership to the peninsula, right? Maybe not to the same level, but I think we can play a role in the whole reunification process. And when I say reunification, I don't mean just the reunification between North and South geographically, but I think this is a perfect chance for us to shed lights to the people the Korean diaspora all around the world. That's what I want to challenge to Korean people, yeah.
And of course, you as a Korean American, your personal story is part of that great tapestry of the Korean diaspora. Are there things throughout this documentary making process that made you reflect upon your identity as a Korean American?
Learning the life of Geronimo Lim, I don't think he was a nationalist. I think he was a humanist. And I happen to believe that whoever really wrestles with the sense of multi-identities, they end up transcending a sense of nationalism, right? So like MLK is a perfect case in point. He struggled between his American identity as was promised by the Bill of Rights and Constitution and his African-American identity. But at the end of the day, he transcended. He didn't say, hey, black people are better, right? He said, okay, we will embrace even our perpetrators. And his message transcended any boundaries. It wasn't a nationalistic message. It was a humanistic, universal message. And I think that's ultimately what Geronimo sought after, too, is not necessarily to preserve his identity so that there's this vain sense of pride or superiority compared to other ethnicity or cultural background. I think he ultimately, by becoming comfortable with who he is and being empowered by his history, I think he was able to embrace people of all backgrounds, Koreans or Cubans, right? And so for me, like, that was the biggest takeaway, is that I don't want people to watch this film and think, oh, yeah, like, Korean diaspora is all about Korea, Korea, Korea. It's quite the opposite. I think once we learn to be empowered and be comfortable with who we are, I think, you know, the next step is to start embracing people of other background. Certainly for me, I grew up as Korean, but, you know, once I came back to the States, I learned what it means to be Korean American. And then when I started traveling, meeting members of all Korean diasporas, I became a member of Korean diaspora. But I think there's a next step, and that's becoming global citizen, right? Espousing the ideals of humanism. I think that's the final message of the film.
That's it for our episode today. Many thanks to Joseph Jun for joining us today. His documentary, Geronimo, The Untold Tale of Koreans in Cuba, premieres in South Korea on November 21st, 2019. If you're in North America and you're attending the San Diego Asian American Film Festival or the Toronto Real Asian Film Festival, please keep an eye open for this wonderful documentary. If you have time, please rate us and leave us a comment on your local podcast platform. It would help us a lot and we would really appreciate it. If you have any questions, please tweet at us at KoreaEconInst. You can also find us on Facebook. And please visit us on KEIA.org to see all of our upcoming events and new research. See you next week.